Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:07 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. The Home and Garden Show features Larry O'Neill. Yep. From Larry's Garden. You've seen Larry on TV hosting Larry's Garden. You've also seen him about town. Easy to see. Tall, tall man. Small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on TV. You've seen me around town. We are happy to be with you this morning. Here is what happens on the show. Larry spends all day, every day, toiling in the soil out there. He's been doing that for more than 20 years, and he brings that insight into the studio so that we can talk about it and share it with each other. And then myself, inspecting houses. We've been in 35,000 houses as a company over the last 25 years. We share those thoughts. But what makes the show really fun for us is to hear from you.
Yeah.
What's going on in your home? What plans, what projects, what problems you're having? And we will sort that all together, and the hope is that your problem will be solved faster, more affordably, and without so many false starts. Maybe work you right through it.
Right.
If you'd like to check in with us, it's easy to do. 855-765-1045. Sasquatch, large man,
yeah.
How was your week, sir?
Absolutely beautiful,
and
man.
What wonderful things did you accomplish?
Well, we did a little bit of gardening here and there. We just rediscovered some interesting ideas. You know, when you're going through the process of landscaping and gardening, one of the greatest tropical plants, I know people are starting to move outside, poolside, and thinking about planting other plants in their containers and, you know, freshening the place up. One of the nicest ones I've ever planted, it's always been my plant favorite containerized plant for the tropical look, is the red banana.
Red banana.
Yes, it's a great look, rich, you know, underside of the leaves are rich burgundy. They're not a burgundy color. The upside of the leaves is dark green. The trunk is red. And it's a really great looking container.
Well, is the banana still yellow or is it red also?
No, it's completely ornamental. It doesn't have bananas. Okay, it doesn't have bananas.
You know, why do the horticulture people do that? They name something a red banana tree, and what does it have? No bananas.
No bananas, right.
There's a song about that. Yes, we have no bananas.
Yes. We'll have to reconstruct that and bring that back into popularity. But that's one of the great tropical plants, and you can have it for years. It's somewhat cold hardy in a container, but the red bananas, if you wanted to spruce up the tropical look, red bananas are a great candidate.
How about like cannonballs in the pool? How susceptible is that red banana in that pot? You know,
well,
it's pretty contained.
It's
chlorine and the other chemicals in the pool.
A little bit of chlorine on it, you know, splashing is not going to be harmful.
No,
One of the other ones that makes a great landscape plant when you're planting is the black banana from Thailand.
Does it have bananas?
Yes, it does. But it gets what makes this banana remarkable is that the trunk is black. Okay, and the underside somewhat black, but
it truly does have a banana, an edible fruit.
Right.
And what color is it?
It's yellowish,
yellow
black, kind of gray, black, you know, color. But pardon me, the banana. The remarkable thing about this banana is that, you know, it's one of the largest bananas, and you can plant about maybe four or five of them, and they're strong enough that a man can climb them. So I mean, they get around 20 to 30 feet tall.
Wow.
And they had just those gigantic banana leaves. It's a really a remarkable looking plant. So if you're wanting to plant a tropical garden, the black banana is from Thailand.
How about cold tolerance?
All bananas can take it up to maybe around zone, 8, 7.
Here we are in zone.
9-8. So we're good. They're going to be some dieback. I mean, there's some in the right position. Depends on where you live. They'll stay above the ground. And, but those are some remarkable plants for a tropical garden. And, you know, one of the things that we were working on is, you know, they love the banana by the doors. And the banana is a great, you know, really nice looking foliage. By the door, if you have, that tropical look, but if you want to contain the size of it, you know, make it keep it short, maybe 2 feet or 3 feet tall, you know, leave it in the container and cut the bottom of the container out. That's another idea. If you have a large plant, how to reuse these containers. If you have a large plant and you want to keep it small because you want to put it in a position that's, you know, has a limited space, leave it in the container. Leave it in the container, cut the bottom out, and you can place it right in the ground just like that. You got your sure drainage. You know, reusing these containers, a lot of ideas.
So by suppressing the root growth, that'll suppress the growth of the plant overall.
Exactly. Kind of like bonsai. Bonsai, they root prune, they suppress the growth of the roots, and they get that low upper structure, you know, and then by pruning, you know, you can have a 400-year-old tree, 100-year-old tree that's only maybe 12 inches tall. But the age of the tree could be 100 years. When I went to the National Arboretum and visit the bonsai display,
they're 300 or 400 years old.
Yeah, that's some unbelievable, you know, old trees. You know, there just it was incredible that they're the age of them. But you know, they're only maybe 24 inches tall. You know, it's amazing. So, you know, you reusing your containers is a great idea. In that form, and also another great idea that we were, you know, people out there vegetable gardening, I'm vegetable gardening, I'm trying to keep the moles from tunneling, you know, in certain areas. Of course, you want earthworms in your garden because it's going to be more productive. It aerates the soil, processes the soil. But how to keep the moles from burrowing through your plants in the middle of summer, which is going to harm your crop yield. So, you could take it, let's say if you have a tomato, you could take a 7-gallon container, cut the bottom out, plant, push that in the ground, and the moles burrow maybe around a foot below the surface, and they'll miss your plant, and you won't get that damage.
Yeah, they'll go right under.
Some of the summer heat.
It, you know, talking about the moles reminded me.
What's that?
On Thursday, I go home for lunch pretty regular time.
Right.
Go sit in the yard. So we're sitting out in the yard, you know, got all the trees and all that stuff going on in the yard. And out comes this big old raccoon. He was an older guy, you could tell.
Right.
You know, he had the gray hair on his face. So I'm like, hey, this is
staring at
nice.
You?
He just came out to visit, you know. And I throw a lot of scraps in the yard.
Oh, okay.
Free-range composting.
Okay.
So anyway, there he is. And it made me think about, do you remember the show Wild Kingdom? Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom?
Oh, yeah. I think they're still on.
No.
Reruns.
Yeah. So Marlon Perkins was the announcer guy, and there was this guy, Jim.
Right.
And Marlon would say, Jim is now about to wrestle the water buffalo. And this guy would be wrestling the water buffalo, and then the next episode would be with the anaconda. But Jim and Marlon Perkins just came to my mind, so I shot this little video and did it like a Wild Kingdom episode, and I stuck it up on Facebook, and this is the craziest thing in the world.
What?
Jim died the same day I thought about him.
Oh, no kidding.
Not that I caused his death, but I, you know, I see this wild animal in my yard. I'm thinking about Wild Kingdom. I'm thinking about Jim.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we used to watch that when we were kids.
He passed away.
You know, that was, you know, very popular.
I love that show.
Sunday show. I think Sunday night. Yeah, it came on Sunday night.
I don't recall the when, but I absolutely.
Right. Oh, yeah. We only had like two channels when we were young.
Three.
Three channels when we were young.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. The difference. Yeah.
I thought you'd enjoy that with the moles and the raccoons and the other thing. And I was protecting my pineapple plant.
Oh, yeah.
I have three.
He's looking at that thing, probably.
I have three pineapples in my raised bed, three plants, one of which is fruiting.
Oh, wow.
And my understanding, correct me on this if my memory's not right, they only fruit every other year.
Right.
Well, last year, the other two fruited, and the raccoon got them.
Oh.
I was not happy about that.
He's out there surveying the, I don't know what you can do about that.
I'll tell you what I did on this one.
Yeah.
You know the wire things that almost look like a giant funnel that you use to put over top of, say, tomatoes that cause them.
Right.
Like, what is that called?
Tomato cage.
Tomato cage.
Right.
I put a tomato cage on top of my pineapple.
Okay. You can't get in there.
Well, it's
the raccoons are pretty smart.
They could probably still do it, but I figure if I can make it a little bit unattractive. The other thing that could happen is that he could strangle himself on the tomato cage, and then I'll have pineapple stuffed raccoon.
He'll be composted very shortly. Very shortly. You know, another thing that, we talked to Jack. He's one of our great listeners. And then, people out there guard. You know, it's amazing that I go to these everywhere in the I go, someone has a bucket full of tomatoes. You know, they're growing these tomatoes in 5 gallon buckets. Yeah, you see them at an air conditioning place. I see them at the residential areas. The 5 gallon bucket garden. You know, so some of the things that I've done before is planting zucchini in. You know, that's a popular, easy to grow vegetable. In a 5 gallon bucket, you could, of course you want to put drainage holes in there.
Sure.
And Jack complained last time that the sand, too much sand.
Too heavy.
So what I've done is that I can use hardwood chips on the bottom. You use cypress mulch on the bottom to lighten it up.
Empty Coke bottles.
Empty Coke bottles is what another thing we've done. So there's all kinds of alternates to do that to lighten the load. But if you're going to, you can reuse your old soil out of old containers. But if you're going to do that, because, economics, you don't want to try to keep the overall production costs low because you're going to make it worth your while as well as having the fun that you can reuse your old garden soil out of your old containers. But most of the soils are that you reuse are depleted. So you're going to have to add a little bit of maybe black cow, just a little bit. In there, and a little bit of calcium.
So, calcium?
Yeah, garden lime, because they got to have calcium for tomatoes and some fruit. So add a little bit of calcium in that, mix it in there, and then add a little bit of fertilizer in there. Just your general fertilizer, slow release. I'd say Osmocote. They got great deals out at Home Depot in Lowe's. I just went over and looked at it, but blend it in there, and then leave around 3 inches from the top. Plant your zucchini in there, and you're in business. Now, you can get these larger containers, too. I saw some at Home Depot and Lowe's, and I saw some.
Once you get past the 5 gallon bucket, they get tough to move around.
Yeah, they get tough to move around. 5 gallons ideal. Put mulch on the bottom, pine straw, plastic bottles. You can get that. One bucket can produce enough zucchini for 2 people for a year, for the growing season.
Okay.
It's very, very simple. And then, but anything smaller that I find when you're using a smaller size container, there's more demand.
How do you like your zucchini?
Like them fried.
Fried?
Yeah.
Yeah, we roast it.
Breaded and fried.
Oh,
I know it's not really that great.
Put a little good quality olive oil on it, a little bit of salt, and throw it right in the oven.
A little bit of mayonnaise on them. A little bit of mayonnaise.
Jeez.
Oh, my gosh. But mayonnaise is good for you. I was reading it's good for you. It
depends on the source of the mayonnaise.
Yeah, it's right. It's high in vitamin A.
And Miracle Whip is not mayonnaise.
No, Miracle Whip is not mayonnaise.
Country Crock is not butter.
No. Miracle Whip is not mayonnaise.
I can't believe it's not butter.
Yeah.
It's not butter either.
Yeah, it's not.
I mean, they're eating real food.
It's vegetable oil. It's whipped up vegetable oil. So there's a good, accessible way. And you can use that same methodology on tomatoes. You can use a zucchini, a squash, bell peppers. You can use it on eggplant. So if you have a small place, there is the 5 gallon bucket brigade.
But you could do that if you were in a 3 or 4 stories up in an apartment. Stick that right out on your balcony.
Right.
You could
right.
do that real well.
And then a lot of people like to use organic. Okay, go ahead. We're getting more.
It's 6:20 here at News 104.5 on Home and Garden Show. Very brief break. Jumping right on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:26 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you're with us. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here enjoying the day together. Taking your calls at 855-765-1045. This week I had the good fortune, Ben Becker, who's down below at the TV station,
yeah.
Action News reporter, investigative reporter. We did a piece on septic.
And specifically, when you're buying a home, you would like to know, is your home on sewer,
right,
public sewer, in this case JEA, or is it on a septic system? And this guy had a really unfortunate thing. The home buyer, the seller's disclosure said it was on JEA. Seller's disclosure said JEA. The listing agent for the home said it was on JEA. She entered the information into the MLS, the multiple listing service. That's what gets the data out, that it was on JEA. The agent for the buyer received the information and said, it's on JEA. The appraiser said it was on JEA, and the home inspector said it was on JEA. So universally, all the professionals agreed, it's on JEA.
No, it's not on JEA.
So the people moved in and they had a sewer problem, you know, a waste problem back up. So they called the plumber. The plumber came out and says, the problem is your septic tank is in failure. He says, I don't have a septic tank. I can prove it. Look, here's all these documents that says I don't. He says, well, you do. It's a neighborhood in Mandarin off Old St. Augustine Road. The entire neighborhood has septic tanks. I mean, everyone has a septic tank in that neighborhood. So mistakes were made. And no one caught it along the way. And the question became, who's responsible? Who's going to pay? The cost to replace the septic system was $12,500.
Oh, my God.
That's a lot of money.
Wow.
And each of the individuals involved in this unfortunate event explained why it wasn't their fault.
Oh, yeah.
And viewed individually.
It's called a blame scheming.
Well, right. It's interesting. So there... As the agents explained why it wasn't their fault, they were in fact correct. As the MLS explained why it wasn't their fault, and I met with the president of MLS, he said, this is why it's not our fault. Now I understood that. And the seller, this is where it really gets crazy. The seller, the person that filled out the seller's disclosure, was a trustee for the estate.
Oh, okay. He didn't really.
He didn't know what he was saying.
Yeah.
So that was where the initial wrong began. He's saying, "Hey, I'm just a trustee. I didn't know."
Oh, okay. So it's a trustee, but well, you got to know.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So here's the point of fact: when you give a piece of information,
did the trustee look at the JEA record?
I have no idea what he did.
Maybe he looked at the JEA record.
As they say in news, he did not return my calls.
I didn't
actually reach out to him. I don't know who it is. I was just doing my little part of this particular investigative report. But the lesson in all this is from Ronald Reagan. You know what Ronald Reagan said?
Trust but verify.
Trust but verify. And how do you do that? There's a website you can do that at called Sewer, S-E-W-E-R, sewerstatus.com. And for virtually every place...
Sewerstatus.com.
Yeah.
Right, my favorite website.
Sewerstatus.com. It's true. So you can go there and determine, it'll tell you who to call, what website to go to for whatever area you live in. So whether you're in Clay or St. John's or here in Duval or wherever you are, it will give you the phone number or the website to do verification. So trust and verify. Real estate agents should be doing that. Home inspectors should be doing that. Appraisers should be doing that. Trust and verify so people aren't harmed.
But what if the trust and verify is not right?
If JEA is wrong, and I had this happen to me about 6 or 8 years ago, JEA a person was paying a sewer bill.
Right.
But they didn't have a sewer, and JEA paid the connection fee.
Okay.
So that's how that worked. It's 6:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, then more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:35 at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden. He's here with me, ready to take your calls and all things about toiling in the soil. And me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, ready to take your calls and all things that relate to your home or other building events. If you'd like to check in, we'd love to hear from you. The number is this number, 855-765-1045. It is the time of year as we're warming up.
It is starting to warm up.
Where people start getting enthused and excited about attic fans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the belief is, if only I had an attic fan, my attic would be cooler, and I would save somewhere between $3 and $4 million a year on my electric bill.
Yeah, $3 or $4 million.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to blend for you data from the Florida Solar Energy Center. Those are the folks who study all that sort of energy efficiency stuff. And then blend that with the experience of crawling through about 6,000 attics. So here's the story. When you go into an attic, it's in summer, it's hotter than outside.
Oh, way hotter.
Way hotter. And the reason for that is the sun is beating upon the roof. And that heat then, radiant heat, gets down into the attic, and there's no ventilation or poor ventilation, so it gets hot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if your attic was like a gazebo,
right,
and it had nice ventilation, it would be cooler rather than warmer. So yeah, the challenge is, how are we going to get the attic to be cooler?
Right.
If the ventilation is sufficient, the attic will be reasonably cool. Okay, so we need ventilation.
Under 150?
Well under 150.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if it's 100 degrees outside or 90 degrees outside, if it's only 20 or 30 degrees warmer, that's not that big a deal.
Okay.
It's when it's 50, 60, or 70 degrees right, warmer that you really have an issue. So the first order of business to cool the attic so we can be more efficient and more comfortable is to improve the ventilation. So wider and more extensive vents around the soffits, and better vents either at the gable ends or through the top of the roof.
What about those ridge vents?
Ridge vents is a good thing, but here's the deal. They're very restrictive. Mm-hmm. So it has to do with what is the total surface area in square feet to vent. And we'd like ideally to see at least one every 100 foot or so.
Mm.
100 square feet. So what happens is, if an attic is really hot, that's indicative of poor ventilation. So someone gets the great idea, well, we'll just power vent it. We'll put these attic fans in there, and we'll just suck and draw all this air through. Here's the challenge. If the attic fan is able to suck, let's just say, to make the math easy, 1,000 square feet, cubic feet per minute. If it was doing 1,000 cubic feet per minute, but the natural flow of air, there's only enough ventilated space to do 100.
Right.
It's got to get it from somewhere.
Right.
And what ends up happening is it actually sucks the cool air out of your conditioned space. So it's through the attic access ports and where the wires go through and where the pipe goes through. So you're cooling your attic, but you're doing it by bringing conditioned air up in there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you suck air out of your living space, that means the house then will pull more outside air.
Wasn't there a calculation you can do to figure out how many vents you need to put it?
Yeah.
In there?
Yeah.
I mean, so if you have a little, let's say if the attic fan, let's say, you know, moves one, number one, and then you have number one and a half of ventilation.
Yeah.
You know, then you should be good.
Yes. And if you had enough ventilation, you wouldn't need the fan.
Well, being drawing the fan creates a movement, doesn't it?
Yeah, but what about when you're in a gazebo?
Yeah, but the wind always improves the coolness.
Well, there's two different issues on
that. You know what I mean?
There's movement, which changes the way, it's called adiabatic cooling.
Yeah.
Evaporation. That's what you feel it in a different way, but you're not living in your attic, so you're not looking to.
But you're bringing, let's say, they're not superheated air, but you know, it's heated above what the environment is, and then you're bringing in cooler air at a more rapid rate.
Yeah, but the challenge of it is you're bringing in humid air.
That's
hot,
true.
And then if it cools, it sweats.
Okay, okay.
So,
but we're not bringing it down that much in temperature. We're not bringing it down that much.
Here's the real deal.
Yeah. All right.
Is attic fans, you generally don't need an attic fan if you have proper ventilation. And if you don't have proper ventilation and you do an attic fan, you're probably taking it out from the outside. Just one guy's opinion. Your results may vary. Let's welcome to the Home and Garden Show a friend of the Home and Garden Show, and also a very good friend of mine, representing Best Buddies of Florida, and a champion is Randy. Randy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ollie.
What are you doing today, Randy?
I am at home, and I want to tell your friend Larry about the walk.
You want to tell Larry about the walk? Okay, so last Saturday, we had the Best Buddies Friendship Walk at the Jacksonville Pavilion. And my question for you, Larry, Randy, to share with Larry is, who was the individual that raised the most money for Best Buddies for the walk? That was you, right?
I did.
You did.
All right. Hallelujah.
Yeah. Randy was the number one fundraiser, and he was on my team, so that made us the number one team, but Randy did all the work. Hey, Randy, who was who was the champion at the Champions event in the fall?
We did.
That was you again.
Wow, amazing.
That's me again.
Yeah, Randy's ambassador for Best Buddies, graduate of UNF, wonderful, wonderful guy, does so many things in the community, help other people, raising money and doing good stuff. What's your sport event of the day, Randy? Where are you going?
When I'm going to work out today, and this was my first time being on a radio show with you, Ollie, I just say hi, and you're so busy with the radio show.
Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Gonna let you go here, Randy. Enjoy the workout. Randy is a sports fanatic.
Uh-huh.
Probably goes to more sporting events around North Florida than any other single individual. And it's kind of fun when we have best buddies. Randy also serves on the advisory board with me. When we have an advisory board meeting, we have to almost schedule it between sport events around town. I said, where are you coming from? You know, say, oh, UNF, the Osprey girls base softball had a softball game. Oh, okay. Where are you going now? Oh, JU's having a basketball game. He's a fanatical guy. Wonderful, good guy. And Best Buddies is a great organization. Anybody would like to get involved, you can reach out to me, reach out to Randy. So I'm always grateful when Randy checks in with me. He also keeps me in line, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Making sure I'm doing what I'm supposed to do.
All right. Great. And he's the number one raiser of money.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes. And he's a good guy to have on your team.
Okay.
Yeah. Whenever he joins my team, our team wins.
Okay. So all right.
Very, very competitive guy.
Right.
And he pushes the other people to be competitive.
You know, I was walking through Home Depot the other day. I was picking up some materials and stuff, and I decided to go to, you know, because we buy a commercial fertilizer, but I decided to go to the Realm and Lowe's and looked at the fertilizers, you know, and to my surprise, I found that the, you know, the fertilizers are getting more and more greater amount of slow release fertilizer. And this is the time you want to apply fertilizer to your lawn again, because we're coming in. We've been done it early in the season. Now there's not basically, it's been spent and you want to apply now. So when you're in, going to Home Depot, Lowe's or your local garden center, you want to make sure you turn over the bag and look at the fertilizer. And then they'll say the nitrogen will be into two categories, water insoluble, water soluble. But I looked at several bags. I saw some of the water insoluble components almost to 20, which is amazing because the whole thing.
That's indicative of a higher quality as you get.
A higher quality. And the whole industry was based on just basically dumping water soluble out there. It was cheap as you could get. And also, I looked at the Bayer product and it had three different herbicides mixed into the actual fertilizer. So the herbicide is getting better. There's less reliance on atrazine and they're getting a more broad range of herbicides available. So
it's important to read the bag. You don't,
right.
We don't want those herbicides necessarily if you're doing edibles.
Right.
Would that be correct?
No, I'm talking about in lawn.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Lawns. But the lawn.
Still read the bag.
You gotta read the bag. So, even the Vigoro product, which, you know, I've not been a big fan of, had a lot of water insoluble fertilizer in. So if you're do-it-yourself, this is the time you want to get out there, get a couple bags of fertilizer, depends on what you want, and you want to look at the bag. And also, if you're getting weed killer in the fertilizer, you want to make sure that it's not temperature restricted. A lot like putting down atrazine when it's 95 degrees. Is going to be detrimental to your lawn.
Right.
And then also because there's mixtures of grass, now we have zoysia, we have centipede, we have St. Augustine. You want to get a fertilizer that's made for that grass. Also, you want to make sure you get herbicide that's in that fertilizer that's made for that grass. So check that very carefully. Every year I have people who call me and say they put out herbicide or fertilizer and that has the label is the Ortho was a company. It says made for southern lawns. Well, the herbicide in it was 2,4-D. You know, I mean, excluding in fine print, say, Florida Dam, St. Augustine, which is 90% of the lawns here. So you make sure you read that. People call me every year, my lawn's dying. I put down this, it says for Southern Lawns. Well, turn the bottle over, a very bottom corner, it says for excluding Floratam. So
yeah,
you make sure you read the bottle in detail.
So the stuff on the front of the bag or the front of the bottle is sort of market-related to draw you to it.
Right.
The stuff on the back of the bag is really ingredients and procedure and warnings and all the other good stuff. So, yes, you can be attracted to the front of the bottle or bag.
Right.
But you got to flip that baby over to know what you're getting, how to use it, and what it will do damage to.
Right. And then if you're having that... If you're having problems with your grass, I went over a client's house the other day and we were looking at his grass, and he happened to buy a house that I had been working on that grass before. And I tried to talk to the client and says, listen, we can replace your grass, but you got to take all root rot. You know, but you have to pay to get the lawn treated. But if you replace the grass, it's going to die. So he had somebody else replace the grass. We replaced it. He didn't want to treat the lawn. He replaced the grass. And then the client that bought the house, and my new client bought that house, and then he called me, I need to replace the grass again. So, and then he's replaced it. So we're on the third and the fourth replacement.
At what point do you just say no? We had a conversation about this before, is when you're in a situation where a customer is asking you to do something, you're like, no, I can't take your money on this. This isn't going to be effective.
If they said they don't want to do the treatment, they want the grass, I'm going to plant the grass.
Really?
I would have said, okay, it's going to die. Since they said, no, I don't believe you. It's going to, okay, all right, no problem, we'll put it in. But you just sign right here saying that it's going to 100% die. But we're on the fourth replacement, and the grass that was planted currently, I went over and it had been there since spring, let's say February, really, and pulled it up, and no roots. They're all rotted. And so if you're having that habitual problem with, replacing the grass,
take me back to this guy who said no to the right procedure three times. Are you going to put this guy's grass in again?
No, there was another two owners. Been two owners. The first guy didn't want to pay to treat the grass.
Got it.
I said, okay. He says, but I need to put grass in. Okay, I put it in, did it again. You know, he paid another guy to put the grass in. He blamed the other guy's grass.
Yeah.
He said the grass, the other guy didn't know.
That gets interesting when it's done in preparation for sale.
Yeah, it was preparation for sale. Then he blamed the guy to put the grass in first. It wasn't really him. It was you didn't treat for the disease. He says, no, I just want the grass in. I just put the grass in, rake up the old. Okay, I put the grass in. It died.
Fix it good enough to sell.
The other guy put the grass in, and then now it's dying, and then we're on our fourth time to replace it. So if you have that problem eventually, let's look at the soil. Even he replaced the soil. I said, it won't work if you replace the soil. He says, why? Because the splash moves through the water. It's going to be back up there again. He says, all right, okay. Now we're at the time of reality is set in. You got to do something about it. But if you're having that problem, you know, give us a call, or you can do it. Give us a call for instructions on how to do it correctly.
That's a good thing. Then diagnostics. It's 6:50 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Jumping right back on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Show 655 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you are with us. The only reason we are here is to be with you. The only reason they allow us to stay here is because of your tremendous support of us. Myself at Home Pro Inspections, Larry at Larry's Garden, your support of our businesses and of the show has allowed us. We've been doing this together more than a decade.
Thank you
so much. Let's check in with Mark and see if we can give him some ideas on laying down sod. Now, Mark, here's what I've learned about laying sod, and then we'll let Larry finish it out. Green side up.
Yes.
Well, actually, I was more along the lines of talking about what you did. Last year, I spent like $2,000 laying down sod in a very small yard because it continually kept dying.
Right.
And I learned about sod webworms. and the fact that they really liked the moist soil. What was happening was, we thought we were treating the ground well enough, but we weren't. And so every time we laid down new sod, the sod webworms would eat it all up. And so that I probably replaced it like three different times.
Well,
you're getting good at it.
Yeah, you're getting. You can get a job laying down sod. But the sod webworms will eat the leaves of the grass, but it will not kill the grass. And so you
really?
Yeah. So
that's what they told me was killing the grass.
No. You can look it up. I mean, they have. This is a science. Okay. It's just not, you got a red shirt on one day and you walk across your grass and it dies. The red shirt causes it to die. But no, it's odd webworm. You can look it up. They just defoliate the grass. You put a little fertilizer on it and it comes back. It is causes it to be unsightly, but, it's just that. But I think if you have a moist area, that's definitely an area, where you could have take all root rot. And how do you determine, how do you make an evaluation of where this is in fact the case? So you'll notice that the grass will start to thin down and you'll see some thatching, a lot of thatching. That will be your first sign. And then spots that are thinner than others. And then also the grass blades will start to get reduced in size and some yellowing, uniform yellowing of one blade or stuff like that. That would be one of the indications. And then you go and pull up the stolon, and the stolon will be all the roots will be blackened or dark brown. St. Augustine roots should be white or very light beige with a lot of lateral roots. When they're darkened and black brown, dark brown, I don't get that word right, that means they're dead. And then examine the stolon, and you'll see small pencil size brown areas of the ring around them, or a little larger. That is a lesion caused by the fungus. The fungus starts up on the roots, moves up the roots, then starts attacking the grass blades, and then moves into the stolon. And then that's how you can tell if it is that. Also, if you're in the late stages in the grasses, you'll notice that you'll have little green clumps of grass, but no stolon, no runner. So that being the late stages is just struggling to get it. And one of the real telltale signs is if you can get right on the margin where the grass is half alive and half, in great shape, is that you pull up a stolon there and you look at the older growth on the runner. It's not really a runner, but we'll call it a runner. But the older growth, the roots are going to be blackened or non-existent. But right on the tip, they'll be green. Not green, but white and beige. They're somewhat healthy because the fungus hadn't had time to attack them. So the grass is trying to run away or get away from that. So these are the signs that you can tell that you have take all root rot, or you can have pythium. But the difference between pythium and take all root rot, you won't see any lesions on the stolon. So that is the difference. And if you have
both funguses.
Pardon me? Yeah, both funguses. If you have that, then you're going to have to drill. And it's a little bit of a process, to treat the soil. And then once you plant the grass in there again, it should grow fine. But you can plant. It is not sod webworm. I mean, sod webworm is not going to kill the grass. It's either pythium or it's take all root rot.
Okay. Now, the bug guy or the yard spraying guy.
Yeah.
In the spray that he's spraying for fungicide or whatever, that's not going to take care of this?
No. It has to be a specific fungicide for that particular disease. And the reason they don't use it, because it's high cost.
Now, do I have to take up the sod in that area?
Yeah, I would. It's part of the process. Or you could, if you have some good sod, you can leave it in place and treat and then remove the dead bad stuff. All right?
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Mark. It's 7 a.m. here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back.
Help. helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. It is 7:10. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Home and Garden Show. The Home and Garden Show is heard every single Saturday from 6 until 8 a.m. right here on News 104.5 WOKV. The Home and Garden Show features Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden, taking care of all things around the yard, and me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, taking care of all things related to your home. That's how we do that, just exchanging and sharing ideas together and then taking your calls to help solve your plans or your projects, your problems, whatever it is we'd like to interact with you and get us all moving in a good direction. The number to call if you'd like to check in is 855-765-1045. I would like to take a deep dive for a moment on
a
subject I'm passionate about, and that is the subject of water.
Okay.
Not only am I a boater.
What are we, 98% water?
That's a bunch. We're mostly water. So this whole thing about water softening, and you know and I know in our roles in our daily businesses, we're essentially consultants.
Right.
And then here on the radio, we're taking calls, and people expect the information to be truthful and correct. So we're always challenged. And thankfully, we have resources, you do as well as I do, of folks we can call, whether they're related to government or business or wherever, to get right answers. So one of my only go-to guy, as it relates to questions about drinking water is Mark Kinder at Affordable Water. And I want to solve this whole mystery about water softening. So if you're thinking about water softening, that means water might be hard. Well, what the heck does this hard water thing mean? Here's what hard water actually is. This is from the Department of the Interior, the U.S. geologic people. Right. This is the factoids, the science. It says 85% of the water in America is considered hard.
Right.
Okay. What the heck does hard mean? Hard is a measure of the dissolved solids essentially in water, and it's measured in grains per gallon.
Right.
Grains per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So soft water means there's less than 1 grain of calcium or magnesium. That's the measure.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 1 grain per gallon. That's soft water.
Absolutely.
All right.
It's defined. We got it defined.
It's right. Defined. This isn't sales magic. This is science. Less than 1 grain per gallon is soft water. And then it goes up the scale, slightly hard, 1 to 3, moderately hard, very hard, and extremely hard would be 14 or
more. I think that's the kind of water we got here in Jacksonville.
Well, this is where we're going.
Yeah.
So by the standard, by the science, soft water is less than 1.
Right.
Extremely hard, which is the highest term they use, is 14 or more.
Mm-hmm.
The average hardness of water as measured in Jacksonville is 17. So on average, the water that we consume in Jacksonville is considered extremely hard.
Right.
So that's the scientific facts. Now, when you're thinking about, okay, I want soft water, you decided you wanted the soft water so you don't have soap scum and your hair is prettier and all these other reasons.
Yes.
You decided you want soft water. The first thing that has to happen is to measure how hard is my water presently.
Right.
So like, the affordable water would come in, measure the hardness of water, and they say, Mr. O'Neill, the hardness of your water is
off the Richter scale.
17 or whatever, whatever it measures to be.
For sure.
Okay. And then working with you, blending the what you're concerned about in your water, how soft you want it, anything else you want with the water, and your budget, very candidly, would prescribe equipment to bring the water into the places that you want it, into the places, meaning the scientific measure less than 1 grain.
Right.
So then Affordable Water installs the equipment, and then what do they do after that?
They test the water.
Test it. Then you test it, and it needs to be below 1 grain per gallon.
Right.
Then you have soft water.
And if someone's selling you a product that has been tested below 1 grain a gallon, it's not
then
soft.
You didn't buy.
It's not soft.
It's
water.
Not soft.
Yes.
It's just that simple.
Yes.
It's just
very
that simple. So when you're making the decision to purchase the water treatment slash water soft equipment, and softness is important to you. Now that you understand it's science, this is how you have that discussion. The easy thing to do is just call affordable water, Jackson.com. That's the easy thing to do.
Right.
But if you make some other decision, you've already been approached, you've got to do the after installation measurement of hardness.
Right.
And here's an indicator for you. If the company that you're dealing with, and some of these people are so aggressive in their marketing, it's nuts.
Right.
But if they're dealing with, if they won't agree to an after installation hardness test,
then it's probably not soft water.
It's probably not soft water.
And that's according to the National Geographic, not National Geographic.
U.S. Geologic Survey. So that's the science facts behind the marketing hype of the idea of, am I treating the water? Am I filtering my water? Am I soft water? This is important.
Treating, filtering,
they're being ripped off every day.
Right.
Being sold things that they think do one thing, but it actually doesn't.
Right.
Hardness is science.
Right.
And that's the story.
Testable.
I get pretty passionate about that.
Yeah.
And a big shout out and a thanks to Mark Kinder. He keeps us readily supplied with the factoids.
Right.
So we can talk science and facts rather than marketing hype and hyperbole. All right. Let's check in with Mike in Orange Park, who's selling a home, has a question for us. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Mike.
Thanks for having me. I listen to y'all show all the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a home that we've lived in. It was new when we bought it. It's a large brick home, and we're getting ready to sell it. It's just gotten to be too big for my wife and I, and we're trying to decide how much we need to refurbish the house as far as things like carpet, paint. We've got some tile to repair. The house is in very good condition. We've taken care of it, but you know, when you put a house on the market, how far should you go as far as the carpets, painting, and stuff like that, appliances?
Fantastic question.
Other people they want to make their own decisions. So what do you do?
Here is the answer that the numbers back. Zillow, our good friends at Zillow, which some people love and some people hate, have fantastic data on the selling of houses. Zillow data supports the idea that if you have the home inspected at the time it goes on the market, it will sell in less time for more money. Here's why. You'll know everything that's right or wrong with the home, and then blending with you and your real estate agent will make the decision how to price the home in its present condition. And then the agent, looking at the same data that you're looking at from us, the home inspection company, will make a decision which things will result in the greatest return on money. So my mission, my real statement is, you don't need to fix anything if its price reflects its present condition. And then only replace or repair those things that will have a positive net dollar return. Does that make sense?
It does.
Here's what happens, Mike. When people are preparing their home for sale, they tend to fix the pretty stuff. They want to make it look a little nicer. They tend not to be aware of or spend money on the performance related things. What's the actual true physical condition of the home? So then when the home inspector comes in, they want a reduction in price, even though you've already spent money to jazz it up. So that's what the data supports. Inspect, price, and then make decisions on repair from there. Okay.
Well, that gives me a path to look at, and I wrote down your website, so maybe I'll call your office Monday.
Yeah, that's great. We'd appreciate that. But that is the fastest path to the cash, is knowing the right condition, setting the right price, and away it goes. All righty?
Yeah, you just wonder, you know, like carpets. The carpets are in bad shape after that long, and you just wonder whether to replace them, but
well,
somebody buying a house might want something totally different.
Yeah, that's exactly right. No matter what carpet you pick out, there'll be somebody that thinks it's awful and not buy your house, even though you've just spent money to put in the wrong carpet. So, but in concert with your real estate agent, they'll help you make the right best decisions, you know, based on the neighborhood, price point, and the physical condition of the home after home inspection. I wish you good luck with it. And the website is gohomepro.com. Thanks so much, Mike. Down
Thank
the fruit
you very
cove.
Much.
Oh, you know what? It's time for the break. I got all excited about going to food court. 7:20 here at News 104.5. It's like a Larry maneuver. 7:20 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right back on the phones to your calls, and likely we'll be talking about water heaters. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 7:25 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill's here. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. And joining us from Fruit Cove, chat about water heaters, is Joseph. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning.
Morning. How can we help?
Thank you for my call.
Thank you.
Yes, I got, I've got this water heater that's been, it's original water heater, probably about 15 years old now. And about 3 years ago, I already had changed out the elements and drained it. However, I'm not getting any hot water now. And I'm kind of, I think where I'm really leaning is just having it replaced. However, if I thought there was a good possibility to just replace the elements again and drain it, if that was enough, would like to go that route. But I really don't think that's reasonable to do after it being as old as it is, and wanted to get your opinion and any little nuggets of wisdom that you might be able to share with me.
Well, Joseph, I'm a frugal guy, so I applaud your changing the element thoughts from over the 15 years. But to be truthful, at 15 years, it's really at the it's beyond its typical life expectancy.
Yep.
And if you keep changing the elements and make it go further and further and further, you could do that, but then sooner or later, the failure mode will be the tank rusts through and you have water every place. So I think it's lived a good life. I think you've taken great care of it. If I was spending my own money, it would be time to replace that water heater. You asked for additional nuggets. I would be sure that you choose the next one. It's exactly the same profile as the one that's leaving. It's size and height and whatnot. That'll make it easiest if you're doing it yourself. And I'm also a big fan of installing a timer. We have timers at our home, and the water heats up right before I need to use it in the morning. So I'm up at 5, so the water heater comes on at about 5, and by the time I'm back out from the workout, the water's hot. And the timer goes off at 8. By 8, you know, it stops making more hot water. Tanya's done showering.
That will extend the life of the water.
It will extend the life of the water heater, and you use less electric. And then it comes on again in the early evening, so we're ready for the evening time. So we save a lot of money. I haven't had a $100 electric bill in 10 years doing all these little nickel-dimey stuff. So are you going to do this yourself, Joseph?
Not exactly, no. I got this aversion. I've got this aversion to electricity that it was enough for me just to do the to change out the
light bulb.
Element.
Okay.
Yeah. Light bulb is in this complex.
So, and I respect your decision. I have the skills to do these things, and I don't do it myself either. That way, when it's not right, Tanya can let that person know rather than me. But yeah.
Are you permitted to recommend any brands? I was thinking maybe just going with the one that I have since it has lasted so long.
Yeah, the most common one we see around is A. O. Smith.
Yeah.
But I for my money, you know, one's not that much different than the other. I'm not concerned about it.
Contraption is pretty simple contraption.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of research on it where I've seen that some of them have some bells and whistles, but correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just kind of thinking just more to go wrong with it.
I'm not a bell and whistle guy when it comes to my water heater. I'm asking it to do one thing, heat water. That's it.
All right. Analogs are always better over digital.
And my timer's analog, not digital.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Well, is that timer a part of the water heater mechanism, or is it?
No. It's a box that mounts on the wall adjacent to the water heater.
I was wondering when my water heater is going to run out. It's 25 years old. It's still working.
That's a good deal.
Yeah. I was, when's that thing
going to run? Do you have gas water here, right?
No.
It's electric. That's pretty rare.
Yeah.
Pretty rare. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about how fancy it is. It's a consumable. You know, you buy one every 12 or 15 years and live happily ever after.
Okay. And that timer, though, is that something that just a non-electrical background person can do on their own?
Yes. All you need to do is read the instructions. However, you know, if you're having a professional install the water heater, just have the timer there, too, and have them do that at the same time. That'll take care of the whole thing.
That's true. All right. Well, you all have been very helpful, and just keep up the great work.
Thanks. I appreciate you being out there. Have a beautiful day.
You too.
It's 729 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, then more of the Home and Garden Show. Really looking forward. I don't think you've ever called us before. Love to hear you just to say hello at 855-765-1045. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 737. Grateful, grateful, grateful that you are with us. Should you need a landscaper during the week?
Yep.
Easy to find all the time online, larrysgarden.com. He's also got the telephone. That telephone number is 346-1970. If you're calling from out of the area, Palm Coast and places like that, 904-346-1970. You're looking for me during the week? Easy to find all the time online. Go homepro.com. And the phone number, 268-8211, outside of Jacksonville, 904-268-8211. Speaking of Palm Coast, let's go down to Palm Coast. Talk to John about water softeners. Welcome, John.
Hey, yeah, good morning. Your intro about water softeners was very timely, as I had a company come out last week and, of course, make a sales pitch. And they did some tests. Of course, you know, the water changed colors and there was a lot of sediment on the bottom, and then they ran it through a miniature of their equipment, and, of course, the water came out with no color change and no sediment.
Did they do a hardness test?
Claim they did.
What was the grains per gallon of hardness?
That's my point. I didn't get any grains per gallon hardness.
What they did, to be honest, was a demonstration as opposed to actual measurement. That's exactly why we spent the time to go into that, and I'm very grateful for your call. Hardness is measured in grains per gallon of calcium and or magnesium. That is the scientific measure. Soft water is less than one. Very hard water is 14 or more. In our region, it typically measures up towards 17. A test of the water will tell you, am I hard, yes or no, and how hard. And then that is how they prescribe the right equipment and the right settings for the equipment. And then after it's installed, measure the hardness, and it should be under one. Everything else is marketing, smoke, mirrors, and magic.
Exactly. I figured that from your presentation. And so I have a couple questions. My first question is, will I be able to test is there something I can buy on the market or I could test the water myself, number one. Number two, when somebody offers me three levels of equipment, I get suspicious because I'm thinking, You know, it's like, I don't know, buying a car and you add accessories.
Yeah.
And it either softens the water or it doesn't. Why do I need to spend the extra money for all these, as you call them, bells and whistles?
Right. Now,
and what I'm thinking is, I'm very handy DIY. I've done a lot of modeling on my house. And I'm thinking if I could buy one through one of these big box stores and install it myself, but what do I need to look for?
Right. First and foremost is the diagnostics. The easy answer, affordable water jacks. I go to the website, give them a ring, and let them talk you through it. I think that's the long-term right best answer. That said, could you purchase an equipment and do it yourself? Yes, you can. You could do that. The challenge is, did you pick the appropriate piece of equipment? To the bells and whistles and three price ranges, I actually like that because there's more things to treating water than just softness. You may decide you want a reverse osmosis system at your kitchen sink. You may decide you want some other type of filtration. And all of those things have different price points as you blend that system together so it all gives you the water exactly the way you want it. Sometimes the budget says, I don't want all those other things at this particular point, but at least you'll understand the options and how they bolt together. And if at some point in the future you decide, hey, I want affordable water jacks to add this next thing, the system, you know, it can be added later. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So choice, to your point, choice in price point is reasonable. I'm not offended by that. I think that's very reasonable. As long as that the choice is backed by the actual diagnostics of the water, the real science behind the water, and it's an educated choice rather than a fear and magic choice. Okay?
Okay. Well, if I were to get it, well, I get an entire house a sulfing system.
Yep.
Then why would I need to add something like a reverse osmosis at my sink, let's say?
Because the water that comes out of the reverse osmosis equipment is doing things that, to the water that are different than the softness.
Okay. And what would that be?
It's removing other things from the water besides just the calcium and the magnesium.
Oh, I see. So the water softener systems, what it does is it just takes those particles out that makes the water hard.
That's right. Specifically the calcium and the magnesium. Yeah, your questions are good questions. Soft water is not filtered water. Those are different things. And that's why the science behind it is so much more important to have that consultative approach like they do at Affordable Water Jacks, as opposed to, oh, look, your water turned green. Oh, now it turned blue. Now it's got a bump in it. That's marketing demonstrations. You know, imagine going to the doctor and they did that, you know, and they say, hey, we took a blood test. And what happened? Well, it turned green. You're like, well, what does that mean? You know, it doesn't mean anything. You want science.
So if I got a filtration system, that would not soften the water.
That's correct.
Two different pieces of equipment.
Exactly correct.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm glad to know that.
Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. And that's the reason that places like Affordable Water Jacks offer you a good, better, best. It's the diagnostics. What's my present condition of the water? What do I want it to look like when we're done treating it? Do I want it softer? Do I want no chlorine in it? What is it that I'm looking to do? Okay.
Do they come down to Bonkos?
To be honest,
yeah.
They do? Good.
I think so.
Yeah. Affordable Water, just give them a call. Mark Kinder is the principal there. And give him a ring. Ask for Mark. And just tell him that you and I had a dialogue on the radio, and he'll sort it with you. If nothing else, you're going to end up highly educated and make good decisions.
Bye.
All right. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Bye.
Bye.
Margie on the west side is searching for a CSA in Jacksonville. Welcome, Margie.
Hi, Margie.
Hello. How are you?
I am great. I love your idea. And let me share, if I may, Margie, for those that may not be aware.
Right.
Sorry?
Right.
A CSA is a community-supported agriculture. I mean, what they are, local farms, and you purchase essentially a share. So you pay the farmer a little bit of money, and each week that whatever's ripe and harvestable comes in your direction. Margie, what part of you're on the west side, right?
Well, yeah, I'm going towards Cecilfield off 103rd, so okay. That's fine.
So Jacksonville has about 7 local farms and farm groups, which is a strange term, that are involved in community-supported agriculture. The website where they're all listed is localharvest.org. And once you get to localharvest.org, just the drop-down will give you Jacksonville. There's 7 of them. I've been to 7... all but 2 of them. Urban Folk Farm is on there. A local Fair Farm Jacks is on there. Those are all great. Down to Earth Farm, I've actually had dinner at their farm. It's fantastic. So localharvest.org. And something else you might consider, and Tony and I do this at our house, we have a service called Front Porch Pickings, frontporchpickings.com. And what they do is they go to the local CSAs and pick things up, and they deliver it right to your house. So we get fresh fruits and veggies from the local farm delivered to our home every single week. It's affordable, it's wonderful, and you get to sample things from every one of the CSAs, or not every one. There's different ones participate in different ways, but a multitude of local farms. It's really great fun.
Okay, so it's localharvest.org, and they'll list all the 7 groups.
Yep, they have all the farms right there. Yeah, they tell you what.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad you're interested. It's fun.
Yes, I am very much. I'd like to find out how to start one in my area.
Well, you can.
I've been Googling the CSA's information on the internet, and there's a lot of good information about that. So
yeah, I would start, if you have that interest, at localharvest.org. That'll give you all the contact information and maps and whatnot to the local farms, and going out and have the conversation with those folks.
Yes, that's what they suggested, that I first join the TSA.
Yep.
To get involved and see how they, because they all work differently.
That's right.
You know, according to what I've been able to gather.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate the information.
I'll tell you somewhere else you can go to learn a little bit if you're just looking for fun is stop over to the Riverside Arts Market under the bridge there in Riverside.
Riverside Arts Market,
yep.
Okay.
There's a, it's a farmer's market, local. They have music. It's a fun place to go. But anyway, there's always 6 or 10 local farmers there also. And some of those are active in the CSA, and some of them can direct you to similar things. Okay?
Very good. Thank you so much. You guys, I love you. You do the greatest job.
Thank you. Appreciative. Over to the west side, staying in the west side, checking in with Rochelle, see what's up with her kitchen floor. Welcome, Rochelle.
Hi, Wally. Love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
my kitchen floor, the tile started about 4 or 5 days ago to start pushing up and breaking the grout in between them. And accidentally popped one of them, or pulling it up, but I don't see any water or anything underneath it.
It's
as
a ceramic. It's a ceramic type tile, a hard tile.
Yeah,
are
yeah.
You on a concrete slab, or is your home on a crawl space?
Yes, no, it's a concrete block home.
How long has the tile been down?
I believe about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
My husband did it as a teenager for his mom.
Nice, a legacy. Usually when the tile releases, especially after a long period of time, it has to do with moisture under there. So that's what.
Well, they redid the plumbing on the house. It used to, I guess, come up through the slab.
Uh-huh.
But when the older brother redid the plumbing, he brought it down from the attic.
That's very common.
And so those pipes that were used to be in the floor are no longer being used. So I was thinking, did they rot out and now moisture coming up through?
That's a fantastic guess. Is that, and based on what you're describing, likely that's a old galvanized pipe. It may just have rusted through, and now what you've got is 4, 5, 6 or more holes right through the slab, and it's allowing water to penetrate right through. Yeah, that sounds like what's going on. Almost assuredly, it's moisture related, and given what you've described.
So do I have to pull up all the tiles, or can I just pull up what's loose right now and replace them?
Well, first and foremost, you have to affirm what the source of the moisture was and make it stop.
That's what I thought.
That's the first order of business. And then the second order of business is how many of those tiles are presently loose, and is it really salvageable?
Yeah. I'm up to 10 tiles right now that I've had to take up.
Yeah. I'll tell you, one of the things, if you take like the back end of a broomstick or whatever, and tap on the tiles, or if you've got some nice spiked high heels, walk around in your spiked high heels, and you'll hear a hollow sound.
That's how we figured out which ones need to come up. That's how we figured out how extensive the problem is.
And they're spiked
they
high heels? Are you kidding me?
They put, no, we'd use a handle of a grout saw. Come on now. The other way, my husband probably would have been a lot more enjoyable with the other way, but I didn't think of it at the time.
It's a consideration.
In the future, I will consider that.
It's Saturday night. Yeah.
But that's how we figured out. And now, see, they laid the tile in the kitchen before they put the cupboards in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably going to have to pull out all the kitchen cupboards.
Ouch. They can cut the tile. That might save some time and money.
But.
Yeah, because right now I've only got one that's like going under the cupboards. But that's kind of my idea was the fact that if they switch the plumbing that there's a good possibility. Because this area is also very wet. We've had a lot of problems with drainage. We had to put in a sump pump.
There you go.
A front drain along the garage.
Yeah, so you know you have water problems, and you have every reason to think you've got deteriorated pipe. So it could be your plumber can help you with that. If not, you can give us a ring, and we can get somebody out there to try to isolate where the water's coming from. If it's, there's no need, or don't spend time or money replacing the floor until you diagnose and solve the water problem, okay?
All right, Larry. I knew you were going to tell me that.
Yep. And put those spike high heels on Saturday night.
All right, well, thank you so much, because I didn't. Yeah. I was at a loss. I cannot figure out what the heck is going on. As we pulled them up, I'm going, okay, this does not make sense. I don't understand.
Well, thank you, Rochelle. Check in with us as the project continues.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye,
you guys are awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
7:52 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right back to it at 855-765-1045. Gosh, that's a long phone number. That's why you should keep it in your phone. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. It's 7:58. We're winding down. I want to express gratitude to you for being with us. Remind you, should you need a landscaper during the week, larrysgarden.com. Should you need to call him, it is 346-1970. And everywhere within the sound of our voices, not on Facebook and all the other streams, but if you're listening on a real Honest to Goodness radio, if you hear us.
Honest to Goodness radio?
Yes.
What is not an Honest to Goodness radio?
Facebook live stream.
Okay.
The app.
Oh, you got one of those old trans. Okay.
Yeah.
I saw someone out there with the transistor radio.
You're trying to promote your business.
Okay, go ahead.
Mini Pete. The area code to call Larry, 904-346-1970. Me at Home Pro Inspections. Go homepro.com. And the phone number, 904-268-8211. Our parting thought of the day is like our parting thought every single Saturday. Wherever you're going, whatever you're doing, please use
your turn signal.
Have a beautiful day. I appreciate you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.